I'm the type of person, if you ask me a question and I don't know the answer, I'm gonna tell you that I don't know. But I bet you what, I know how to find the answer, and I will find the answer.
All right, Dave, my cordial, it is of course Irish, for a very warm welcome, my friends, to Shamrocks and Shanks, another episode where we get to learn from some of the best professionals in the golf world. Now, my guest for this episode is Steve Assel. Steve is a top 50 coach from the UK with over 25 years coaching experience, and really has worked with all level of players, from beginners right the way through to tour professionals. He is currently the England Girls Under-18s coach, as well as a member of the PGA of Great Britain and Ireland coaching team. As well as excelling in the world of coaching, Steve is also an industry leader in his golf coaching business, where he works with and assists other coaches in their day-to-day business operations, from marketing and advertising to goal setting based on their own career aspirations. For the club golfer to start this pod, we draw on Steve's immense teaching experience to chat some myths he sees in the golf industry. We chat a little bit about social media and how the perspective of which way you really look at it can change the evaluation of whether it's a good or a bad influence for your game. We discuss his role with the under-18 England girls team and what perhaps we can draw on as adults from how these young stars of the future go about learning and improving their games. Lastly, for the club player, we discuss the ever-widening selection of golf coaches due to technology and what criteria might help you select the right coach to help your own game. When we move into the coaches section, we get to chat Steve's current role as a golf coach business consultant. Here he talks about some of the bigger mistakes he sees coaches make in their everyday business, and as well as some of the qualities he sees in the very successful individuals. He gives us some intro steps to maybe assessing your own coaching business, and a look at how exactly he goes about helping coaches create more visibility and in turn more revenue. From my first interaction with Steve, I've never once doubted his integrity to use his skills to help golfers, coaches, and everyone in between. His intent with students and professional clients is a long-term relationship development to achieve your goals, and I find that so brilliant in a world that becomes hungrier every day for immediate and instant satisfaction. I've been very fortunate to meet some amazing individuals through my path in the golf industry, and it's no coincidence that the amazing individuals seem to also share and possess a passion to not only progress their own career, but also that of others. They are, despite their own financial goals, able to convey a trust and a belief that they are working with you and alongside you. This is what this podcast is about, to give those genuine, the passionate, and the ones who care a platform to tell their story, and to give you, the listeners, the opportunity not to work with the person with the biggest social media or the most expensive budget, but a different set of values. The values that really matter, and the values that will still matter in 20 years' time, not in 20 minutes' time. Ladies and gentlemen, Steve Assel. All right, Steve Assel, very warm welcome to Shamrocks and Shanks podcast. Thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule to come on the show. Very, very experienced in all levels of coaching and indeed working with coaches to help them with their own business. So I think there's going to be a fantastic hour or so of discussion. Just to give some background, and then I'll give you the platform to let the people, the listeners know, you know, where you come from and how you got to where you are now. Top 50 golf coach in the UK, England's girls coach. You're also part of the GB&I coaching team. CEO of the golf coaching business, which is your own business we'll talk about later. And you've worked with a multitude of levels of players, from the club golfer right up to tour pro. Accurate description, or can you add more?
Oh, yeah. I mean, dad of the year.
I forgot that one. Sorry, my bad. That's the most important one.
I mean, it's just, I guess over 25 years in the industry. Exactly. 25 years in the industry, you know, you kind of build up a few little bits here and there on the CV, but yeah, just helping people, I think, is the CV. That's what I kind of try and do. And yeah, it's just great to be here. It's great to be on the pod and good to see you.
Yeah, you too, mate. You too. We kind of like to start off, and I'm going to start a new tradition and show you a little bit of a softball. And depending on your views, I'm going to give you the platform again to do some myth busting on golf coaching or golf technique, whichever kind of way you'd like to come at this. So give us two or three of those myths that you want to dispel right now from your perspective.
Oh, great one. That is a great question. So myth busting. So the first one would be, you know, you've got the usuals. The harder the work, the harder you work, the better you get. I completely disagree with. I think it's all about quality, not quantity in this game. So that'd be one of the biggest myths to begin with. I think, you know, other things around that would be, you could go into the world of talent, I guess. talented kids and talented, and the myth that, if you're not talented, you can't be good. I've seen some players really fast track through who weren't the most talented. So I think there's definitely quality. And then you're into your usual myth busts around technique of your head down and your left arm straight. And, we seem to be in a world of got to shallow it and got to keep your left wrist in a certain position at the moment. So I think there's loads of myths out there with technique. And I think the biggest thing is find what works for you and strip it down to how do I get the ball in the hole in the fewest shots possible? That's where I'd start out with from a golfer. So I hope that kind of fits it. But yeah, that'd be the myths for me.
Yeah, and I think when we look at what we do for a living in terms of golf coaching, specific working with players, there is a certain element of myth busting, but also a big element of trying to really funnel that player into, as you said, stay away from these things because generically they don't all work for the everybody or every individual. So our job really is to maybe funnel those players into what works best for them. And then along the way, we're kind of, debunking these things that they had the perception that they saw on social media platforms, wherever that may be, or whoever that may be.
I mean, I'll throw one back there, actually, that's probably the other way around. I think there's a myth out there that you shouldn't watch YouTube and it hurts you. But mm-hmm. I actually think there's some amazing stuff out there. I think the skill is knowing what to watch and how it aligns with what you need. Yep. So I debunk that one. I think you should watch YouTube. You just need to know what you need to watch and how it helps you.
Yeah. So it's kind of really kind of, okay, well, how does it affect me and what should I be looking for? I like 100% agree. Definitely before I started developing my own kind of like library of drills and tasks to give to players, to present to players, that's what I would say to them. Okay. Well, in context, here's what we'd like you to do. Now put that into YouTube or put that online and see if there's some drills that work along what we kind of do. So yeah, so a great resource in one way. I think like a lot of things, if you're using it in the right way and have a direction to it, it can be fantastic. As I mentioned at the start, you've really coached all levels of players, which is really a credit to you and your development and your search to get better as a coach. And you currently work a lot with the England girls team. Sometimes I find, and I don't work with a huge amount of juniors, but sometimes I find when I'm coaching juniors that they'll do something or act some way where I'll go, oh man, if only my adults did the same thing, it'd be really beneficial for them. Is there anything kind of from that perspective that you see that your young girls or the kids that you work with do that you would like maybe, if more adults did this, like either perspective wise, swing wise, obviously there's a little bit of an age gap differential, anything in there?
Yeah. Laugh, have fun. And I think along comes with that would be the biggest thing, which would be inquisitive. I don't think we're inquisitive enough. I think we almost try to be smart and skip the steps when we get older. And yet the messing about, kids love to mess about. And, so the girls I work with are at regional level, we get them from 12 through to 17. And sometimes it's just unlocked. In the fact that you can have fun here and you can learn a lot while you have fun. We can learn to hit a flop shot over that bunker with a 6-iron as long as we then ask the questions afterwards, why did we do it? How can I apply it to something else? So I think sometimes we've got to stop trying to be so serious as adults, and we don't need to go and buy 3 baskets of balls, but actually it can be just go mess around on the short game area, go play 9 holes on your own. And that would be the biggest thing that I take from the kids is that the adults haven't got to them yet and tried to make it too serious.
Yeah, I remember reading a couple of weeks ago something from the Game Light training team. So Ian Highfield and those guys, I believe.
Yeah.
And they were saying, if you have mistakes occur in practice or in learning or in training, don't think that you're learning the mistakes. You're actually learning from them. And it was a really, really interesting concept to look at it that way in a very, very different way. That, like, okay, well, so when I go out and practice that lob shot and enjoy the process, even if I don't hit it great, I'm getting that feedback that whatever I did didn't work. So even on a very, very subconscious, very primary level, that kind of failure, so to speak, although it's not a great word to use, can actually help you learn.
And I think we try and box it up too much because of the contract, if you like, or the exchange of services is different. So usually with juniors, it's either they're working with me at regional level because they've earned that spot. Mm-hmm. So therefore, there's no financial contract gone on there at all, exchange. or the parents paying for the child to be with me. So therefore, the child has no interest in the monetary exchange that's gone on. Whereas an adult's paying something and they're expecting something in return. So I think that they're serious because they paid for it. And then we become more serious because they're expecting something in return. And then we almost try and protect them. As you said, we don't want them to mess up because we want them to feel like they've got something that makes them feel better about themselves when they walk away. So you've got to really build that relationship enough so that they can mess up and it feels safe for adults. Whereas you'd think safety would be for the kids, but that's actually the more, the rough area. That's where they go play more. So yeah, it's interesting.
Do you think there, when you're working with junior players versus adult players, do you think one group is easier to build that trust with, or do you think one group it's more important to build that trust with? How'd I go out there?
Oh, that's a great question. Yeah, I've got you. It just paused a little.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think it's a different type of trust. So I think you have to build trust with both of them. I think with the kids, you just gotta, build the trust around the fact that they can try things and they don't have to try and impress you. So it's them trusting I'm okay to mess around in this environment because I'm learning something. Yeah, that's fine. Whereas I feel with adults, sometimes you've almost got to earn the right to coach, as I would say. I think you have to earn the right and the trust to be able to go and we're going to play with your golf swing here, especially the higher the level the player. When you get into tour players, you've got to really earn that trust to be able to change something and move it. And that can take a long time. So yeah, I think with all of them, you've got to earn the trust, but there's different levels of trust, I think, and different types of trust.
So perhaps more with the junior players, you feel kind of more trust in from human to human, personality wise. And then maybe with the adults, it's a little bit more like, not that we ever want to phrase it like this, but more trust in my swing. I'm allowing you in to help my swing. So maybe more
Yeah.
technical trust.
Yeah, performance trust as well. I think when you get to the highest level, it's performance trust. I'm trusting you with my career. I'm trusting you with, can I pay the mortgage this month? That's a little different from, I'm trusting you with my kids, or for the kids to be able to go, yeah, I'm trusting you as an adult to, that we're gonna have fun, or we're gonna, you're gonna improve my skills.
So it's a very interesting concept. with the advent of like so much tech now in the golf industry, the player really like it, they're no longer restricted by location. If they want to work with you or if they want to work with me, they could do that later on today on Skillist, right? So that's a great option. It's a great avenue, a great kind of seat to be part of for the golfer. What advice can you, and I know you do work on Skillist, as I said, what advice can you give the club player who's looking for their ideal coach and now suddenly has this like nearly supermarket, a kind of area of coaches rather than before they were confined, but that kind of the confinedness nearly limited their options, so to speak. So maybe the decision a little bit easier.
Yeah, I think players had to probably fit the coach and maybe change their learning style a little bit sometimes when they were limited. Whereas now I think you've got this whole kind of, buffet, if you like, of coaches that you can go and select, which could be one of two things, couldn't it? One, it could be quite harmful because you're constantly looking for the next thing. But two, you can probably find somebody that you align with quite nicely now, and that might just be, it might be what technique they've got, what kind of matchups they believe in, what they believe is going to improve your play. Or it might be that actually, I was on a call with a coach this morning from Australia who's doing really well on Skillist, and he's starting to realize that his USP is that he's making difficult things quite simple. And that's what people are coming to him for, because he's just simplifying complex things. We're exposing golfers to a lot of language now that they're finding very difficult. And you get that language come at you early in your game, and you start to go, am I outside of my box here? I don't get this. And so to find somebody that's, even down to the fact of, I'm not going to talk about lead and trail, I'm just going to call it left and right because that's what I know it as. And I think it's cool. So to answer the question, I just think it's great for the individual that they can go find somebody they feel they align with, They can see on socials. They may have a similar sense of humor. Maybe as daft as they like the same football club, and they feel there's a commonality there that's something they can talk about as well. Yeah, it's just great time for coaches, great time for players. But again, it's making sure that there's some kind of I kind of how to describe this, but we've got to be careful that anybody can go on there and coach now. What are the credentials of this person? You know, what's their background and their skill set? Mm-hmm. They are proven formula of improving people. So yeah, I think it's great that you can choose, but you've also got to be very careful who you choose. You know, it's like me finding a GP online or a doctor. Well, you know, their website's pretty good. Let's spend some time with this person. So I think, yeah, you've got to be careful, but I think it's a great opportunity to go spend time with other people elsewhere.
Yeah, I think for those club golfers, look, as you said, it's like a buffet when you go on there. Now there's so many options, and you know, it's nearly tempting. Like, you know, you go onto Amazon and trying to look for like a new toaster, and there's like 40 different ones to choose from, and you're like, oh, how do I even choose? Well, I would kind of go back first and kind of look what's important to you. So as a player, what are you looking to get out of this? Are you just looking to have more fun? That will lead you a certain path. Are you aspiring to be a tour player? That would lead you a certain path. So I think it's very important when I get club players looking for that. Like I always have I know you do this too, kind of little Zoom session. And how can I help you in the best possible way? What are your goals? And see if we are aligned in that same respect. Right. So for those club players out there, right, there's a little bit of a different way of looking at it again. I like testing out these questions on you, you see.
Good. Love it.
Tell me a story about a pupil interaction where they did something that you thought, that's pretty cool. I'd like a lot of my club players, a lot of my adult players to do something similar. And you weren't really expecting it. So it was kind of like something maybe a little bit different that you were like, oh, I didn't really think of that, but that's really cool.
Wow, that is a good one. I mean, we talked about it a little bit earlier on. You know, I was definitely one of those coaches that was almost anti-YouTube to begin with, because I thought it was slowing the progression down of my clients and the people that I was working with. But I ended up with one golfer, you know, like a mid-teens handicapper. And he'd be throwing videos at me every day saying, what do you think to this drill? What about this guy? You know, and I almost ended up in this world of YouTube myself, because I was like, I need to find out what these guys are coaching based on what he's watching. And in the end, we would be, you know, I'd go give him a drill during the lesson. And then his role was, I'm going to go away and find other ways to do what you've told me to do today and send them back to you. And I just want you to validate if it's a good drill, if it works for me or not. So that was really cool, is that somebody was almost, I was like, let's say this guy's pressure shift or his turn isn't very good. I'd give him a drill that I've got in my toolbox. And then he'd throw me another four links and go, this guy's trying to do the same thing. And I'd be like, yeah, but I kind of like what he's doing. I'll use that one too. And so I was building my own toolbox while this guy was kind of, and I'm thinking, all I'm doing here is I'm just a consultant to YouTube. And I was kind of thinking, is this what the future is going to look like, where somebody types in, here's the things, and I go, yeah, go watch this guy, go watch that one, and watch this video and check back in with me. So that was kind of cool.
Yeah, I like that. I have players that do that, you know, and I think it really depends on the type of coach. And we kind of go in, and we're going to talk about coaching section next time, but that would really go into the personal security of the coach that you're working with. And if they are an insecure person in terms of what their information provides, perhaps they wouldn't be so keen to be welcoming of such links and YouTube videos. So you got to be secure as a coach. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Another one that jumps to mind, it's a bit different, this one, because I wouldn't really say it's linked to, you know, taking something away, but the story definitely will link more into the business side. So this was a guy who signed up for a program with me 6 months. He was off 12. His buddies had told him to come in and things like that. And they were like, you know, he never has lessons. So they were really shocked when he signed up to a program. First session, I can remember it as clear as anything. I said, okay, so what do you play off? I'm off 12. Okay. I said, have you ever been to single figures? No, never been to single figures. Okay. So, you know, I don't want to be presumptuous here, but I presume what you'd like to get out of this program is to get to single figures. He went, nope. Says, I want to hit it furthest in my group. And I was like, Really? Yep. He says, I hate hitting first every time. The guys kill me in the bar afterwards. That's all I want to do is hit it further. So you don't want to get to single figures. And he just looked at me and went, if I hit it further, I'll get to single figures. And that was kind of how he got it laid out. So that was kind of on the other way there is, I guess what I learned there is don't assume what people want when they come in. And you need to find out what's important in their world, not what I think's important in their world.
Yeah, it's
so, really, yeah, that was a cool one.
It's really what they want to learn, not what you want to teach in that scenario, yeah, which is, yeah.
And again, and then I think you apply that then to, you know, somebody coming in for a lesson. Do you want to fix your slice? No, actually, I just want to spend some time with somebody else because, you know, I don't have any hobbies in my world. Or I don't have anything. And I think sometimes, yeah, we, you know, it's definitely one working with older clients would be, you know, I'm challenging them to do drills, fill stat sheets out. And they're just going, I don't want to do that. You know, I'm not too fussed if I get better. I just want to feel like I come in and I'm doing something every week and that, and it's regular and I enjoy spending time with you. That was hard to get my head around when I was a younger coach because I was wired up to help people. Whereas sometimes it's just spend time with people. Let's go out and play nine holes together. Okay, let's do that. You know, so yeah, definitely looking at where they're coming from rather than where I'm coming from was really important.
I have a player on Skillus who started doing this a couple of months ago, which I found really good. And what he would do is he would upload his videos of the swings, whatever we're working on at the time. And then he would upload another video and it would be him in front of the camera like we would do. And he was discussing the movements and what he was feeling and how he was getting on and where he felt the issues. And the upload of that would be like 6-7 minutes long. And it started helping me so much. And I was like, oh, I'm actually going to get all players to do this. Because before I would have them like just in writing or in text verbally, you know, describe how the shot went, whether they felt the swing was a particularly good one or any issues. But this, him actually, you know, using his words and his body language and all helped me a ton. So it was a really cool thing where I hadn't come up with the idea. It came to me. But yeah, then I grab it and go, yeah, let's all do this.
Yeah, and that's where we learn the most, isn't it? It's being open to that. Well, that's a great question. That really made me think that one because it's stuff you take in and you just soak it up as you go. And, you know, I hate to say this, but how much of my stuff is original content? I don't really know. I think you know, it's probably not original. It's things merged together from different people and you grab bits and sometimes you can't even remember where you grabbed it from. And it's not always coaches. As you said, it's players, how they do things, you know. You know, like somebody's pre-shot routine and go, that's really cool. Why'd you do that? Well, it helps me do this. Okay. Mm-hmm. Didn't see that in my world. That's not how it works. But that's cool it is in your world. So, yeah, great question.
Yeah, and I think when we look at that on social media, like I've seen some coaches, you know, see other posts of drills and so forth and claim ownership of that drill and, you know, why weren't they credited on that drill, etc. And, you know, I think we're all standing on shoulders of giants. So nobody's reinventing the wheel here. We're all taking a little bit of this, a little bit of that we've seen before and, you know, kind of not using it as our own, but definitely putting our own spin on it, which is very admirable. But again, understanding that it all originated from possibly the same position in the same place.
Yeah. I mean, there's drills that I've definitely come up with myself and then found somebody else doing it, you know, 6 months later. Mm-hmm. And doesn't matter if they've done it or I've done it, you know, and it might not be copied sometimes. We're just all capable of coming up with the same idea. You know, I remember sticking a cane under my right arm and doing a drill and thinking that's kind of cool. And then somebody else did it, you know, in America. Well, I've not posted it. Maybe they came up with the same idea as well, you know, and that's absolutely fine. unless it's a really good idea and then I'll patent it.
Yeah. When we kind of move on to the coaching section, you know, you're very fortunate in from my perspective, in having worked not only in terms of golf coaching specific, like your own skill development, your own learning with some very highly successful coaches and players, but you've also had the opportunity through your own making, through your own success, to work with highly successful coaches in terms of your business, of helping them market themselves, improve their business and so forth. Is there one commonality you see amongst those successful individuals? And maybe let's go for one in coaching and one in the business side of things. Or you could just go with one overall if you see it as kind of more of an amalgamation.
Yeah, it's an amalgamation. The one thing that I think I thought would stand out would be, you know, I guess something practical. All the best people do this or the best people do that. Mm-hmm. And what I found out over a period of time, and this probably comes down to golfers as well, there's just an obsession and a drive to want to be the best they can be. Some it's the best on the planet, some it's just the best in their world. But then what comes with that obsession is a showing up on a daily basis. And so I ended up using a word called stickability. Something, and somebody's like, you made that word up. And I was like, I think so. But it turns out it's in the dictionary. But anyway, that's what they have, is this real stickability to be able to stick at a task. And there's a, you know, there's a player where sometimes you give them a task and you don't give them a time period. You just give them an outcome and you go, here's the drill. And you know, there's some players that will go, when's lunch? Are we done yet? And then you got some players that go, I ain't going to lunch until this is done. And that becomes a real defining point there, because I look at them and go, all right, they've got it. They've got what it takes here, because lunch isn't the priority. Are we done yet? It's I'm going to finish this task. You know, I had it. I'm really fortunate whether we've partly created it and, you know, and partly who they are. But our England regional girls, we set them a task at like 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Parents, 4:30 pickup. You know, and they're on run through these series of challenges. And the last one, I think they had, there was five of them in the squad, and they had to hit four shots inside of like 5 feet or something, hit this pitch shot or chip shot inside. Four of them had to get it inside of 5 feet. And anyway, these girls are on this, like 4:30 comes. I was like, that's it, girls, we're done. Parents are here. One of them's just looked at me and gone, we're not done. And I was like, okay. And I just stepped back. Half an hour later, phone starts going. Parents, what time are we finishing? I was like, when the girls are done is when you're finishing. You know, feel free to come over if you want. An hour later, we're like 5:30 now. And we, you know what it's like? What's really cool in those moments, you go through this whole, you know, kind of thing of excitement. We've nearly got it. We're pissed off. You know, they go through this whole roller coaster, but underpinning it all, we ain't done until we're done. And then when they completed it, just like the emotion and the elation of just this, this is a practice drill, but it means something to you. So yeah, go back to that. It's the stickability, and you take it into the coaching world. Who's prepared to show up for 30 days running on social media? I don't care what you post, post for me every single day, just to show me you've got what it takes without being rewarded for something.
Yeah.
And that's the difference. You know, again, coach on a call this morning, me and Alex Clapp run an 8-week course around building your business. And all we do first few weeks is get them to show up every day. That's your homework. Show up every day. And coaches start to report back in going, I'm seeing some growth here. People are booking lessons. Yeah. You're not doing anything brilliant. You're just showing up. And this one coach who'd been on the last one that we did, you know, I think he got one subscriber on Skillist when he came on it. When he left it, he'd got 14. I phoned him this morning, he's at 27. And he's just like, you know, I said to him, what did you get from the course? And he just looked at me and went, show up every day. That's all I do. I just show up. Some days it's good, some days it's bad, but I'm showing up. And so, yeah, that's what I learned about those good players. I think you take it to Tiger, you take it to Bill Gates, you take it to whoever you want to. There's this innate drive and desire to, don't care how you knock me down, I'm going to keep going.
Yeah, we had, I was fortunate to have Joan Oliver on a couple of days ago, who's Cam Smith's sports performance psychologist kind of coach guide. And I asked him at the end, you know, what's one quality that sticks out with Cam? And he said, Cam will go to the driving range. There's no time. There's no time set on the driving range. He'll go, okay, I want to go hit 20 high draws. And if he hits the 20 high draws in 20 minutes, he's done. He's out. If he doesn't hit them for 2 hours, he's there for 2 hours. And so it just really goes into what you kind of just, and I think from my perspective, when I start listening to or are getting the opportunity to talk to really smart people and really successful people in the business, it's nearly like this kind of like nearly web starts to be created where you say something and then I go, oh, well, Paul over there said the same thing, who's really successful, and Mike over, and you start getting this real continuity of a great basis of, all right, these qualities or these really things that they do all the time.
And the funny thing is, when you go on that journey and you're looking for that, because you've maybe got that drive and desire yourself to do it, mm-hmm. you're looking for this piece of magic. You're looking for something that's going to give you, and actually what almost disappoints you, but makes you realize it's the simple stuff. It's the dead easy stuff that people can't do on a daily basis. And that's what makes it magic, is you just go, you don't need to have this talent. You just need to do this. Now, you line that up with some kind of God-given talent or whatever you want to as well. And then you've got dynamite, when you've got somebody who's, you know, a creative thinker, or they're just super athletic alongside this ability to stick at a task. And, you know, yeah, then you've got something cool. And for me, I always look at things like computer game design and those kind of things. I think of the emotions that you go through where you're like, well, where did the last 4 hours just go? Where you're so into the task, but I ain't leaving until this is done. You know, and there's remotes flying around the room, there's elation, there's all kinds of emotions going on. So I've set up a lot of my skills and practice sessions the last few years just around that, just gamification. How can you get people into that mindset of, you know, it's about the task, not, like you said, not, I've got an hour and a half, I'll be better after an hour and a half.
Yeah, it's really, really interesting when you kind of look at that and those qualities. In terms, again, looking at where you've kind of got to with your own career, your own development, what really have been your biggest influences, like, let's say, technique-wise, in terms of golf coaching? You know, as you grew up and you developed and you learned, who was really your kind of influences there?
The first major influence would have been a coach or a pro at the time. I was probably still an amateur, mm-hmm. and probably at that phase of where we started to film our own swings. It was Faldo era, showing my age here. So it was Faldo era, and it was Led. And, you know, and Led gets an absolute bashing, I think. And coaches have got so much to thank him for, because he's the reason that we charge what we charge.
Yeah.
Simple as that. And everybody always wants to pick people that maybe didn't flourish under him, and nobody wants to look at, you know, I was that era of Nick Price, Nick Faldo, and you just like, Led was the man. And we had a pro who went to Led's guys, I think it was Dave Whelan up at Wynyard or somewhere like that in the UK. He'd come back with this VHS video of Faldo and Price hitting balls at Lake Nona, you know, and we would watch that thing on a daily basis, and we're drawing lines on a screen with a waterproof marker. Now I'm really showing my age, you know. Yeah. But so that was the first influence to go that, okay, there's a real system to coaching here, and people are making changes. It's not just natural ability and who's got the most ability each week. You could actually take it and you could change it and mold it, and we could improve people. So that was the first one. Second one then probably came into my own world would be, I was fortunate. I had a coach, Dave Ridley, who was national coach at the time, who was maybe 30 minutes away. And again, I'd had county coaching, and it was somebody walking the line. And I didn't really think why we did things, but somebody just said to me, maybe, oh, watch your alignment, or move your right foot out a bit, and you'd try it and it worked for 20 balls. And then you'd, you know, try something else. And so I went to see a coach, Rids, who'd, he'd been on his own little exploration journey. And he'd been to spend a lot of time with coaches in the States. And he was almost just bringing that back and sharing that with us. He'd been on his own little sabbatical, spent 6 months out there, found what worked for him, but he had a real system. And I'm trying to think who it was now. Famous coach out of the Keys, out of Florida Keys.
Okay.
I can't think of it is now. I mean, legend in the game, but he's... you know, it was all then we'd go and find the book. What's his book? And it was like, you know, in antique bookstores, you'd have to try and hunt for it somewhere. Yeah. And that was it. That was your Bible. You'd go home and you'd be reading that every night. And, you know, they'd be watching Faldo's vids at Valderrama that he filmed. And it would be like, yes, watch this. And then you'd go and practice that day, what he learned. So, yeah, that was me. And then I guess when then I moved into the coaching world, I guess what I ended up doing was coaching the way that I'd been coached. That's how I started out, was somebody gave me a lesson like this, so I'm going to go give this to somebody else because it's clearly good information. And that got me to a certain point. And then Yeah, in some ways, I didn't really have mentors above me that I was working with day in, day out. And I sometimes see that as it slowed me down because I maybe they couldn't help me fast track so much. I didn't have the network. I couldn't shadow them, all those things.
Yeah.
But I also see it as a strength because actually I wasn't pigeonholed and boxed as in this is how you do it. So it made me go and look elsewhere. And then the last bit probably came maybe 10 years ago. I was really fortunate that we had some good people in a small, I'm from Derby in the UK and it's a small city. And somebody started out an Institute of Sport, which was quite unique at the time. It was all done through national bodies, and things like that. Mm-hmm. And they said to me, you'd be interested in bringing golf into this, as kind of, I guess I was the kind of the main guy in town, the go-to guy in town at that time. But yeah, I'd love to get involved. So, what does it look like? Well, we meet on a monthly basis, just coaches sitting in a room together. Right. No, so no golf coaches in there. No. And so I'm sat in this room with guys that had done four Olympic cycles, was won world championships, and I'm just feeling like a fraud in this room. I'm just like, I'm just a golf coach right here, but I need to try and show a bit of authority. We've got, track cyclists. I mean, in town we had Steve Peters, Dave Brailsford. So we produced some people in Derbyshire. Andy Wood, who'd done four Olympic cycles, had all four pairs in the world championship badminton final, and I was just like, this is just incredible. But to realize what goes on in swimming, what goes on elsewhere, I could take it and I could drop it into golf. And whereas I felt like this, we'd always done what golf does.
Yeah.
Oh, this is how we do it. And what they saw was how far ahead golf was from a technical perspective. And, what you've got a launch monitor that shows how the ball takes off. And this is from somebody who's like, don't you have that in tennis or don't you have that in badminton? No. We're still working with, we don't have tech at all. This is, so that was really cool. And looking at how you could take things and I'd go shadow those coaches. So that was really cool. Because again, then what you start to see is this guy's just good with people. He's a great communicator. Well, she's a great, coaching. Yeah. And that's what I learned really quick was actually, you need to learn the technical aspect. But Steve, tomorrow you could go teach swimming. You could go coach swimming, let somebody show you what the technique looks like, and then you go do what you do, which is, empower people, make people feel comfortable, inspire people, demand things from people. And that's where, where we're at. And I think I then took that probably where I ended up in the business world and went, well, how does somebody do that in Dell? Or how does somebody do that at Apple? How does somebody, coaching, not just in sport, but in business and everywhere. So that's when the light bulb started to go on for me. Sorry, long-winded answer, but I think you knew that where do those mentors, inspirations come? It's from, say, the benefit was not having the mentor that was going to fast-track me, but actually now I'm further down the line, I feel it's made me more rounded and nothing was handed to me on a plate. I had to go find it and work on it. I played a lot of basketball when I was young at kind of pro level. And again, it was exactly the same. I was like, this is coaching. This is sports. It's exactly the same things that are involved.
We're going to have to get you back on because there's other questions I want to ask before we wrap up. But I have so many going from that one question of coaching versus do you think we would be better coaches in golf with less technology? And do you think...
There's another big question.
So that's a big, big question. All right. We're not going to get into that, but that's what it does. Again, having Stuart Morgan on a couple of weeks ago, he was saying to me the influence of having, talking to other sports coaches, which he also does, goes outside of golf. And they would say to him, what do you mean you don't even watch your player play golf? Yeah, that's that's not coaching, but we have all this tech so they can my player and we have stats and we can say, oh, well, he hit 15 greens today. So he must be good. Approach shots must be just huge topic.
Because we're so in golf world, in our golfing world, that we sometimes don't look at, how people learn, how they perform at the best. We just try to do the best what's in our industry. Side note on that very quickly. I turn the TrackMan off for 3 months every summer. Don't even take it out with me. I just go, right, that's off now. Let's look at ball flight. Let's look at how you're feeling, what you're doing. Let's go watch you play. I think it's so important to do that and not just number chase. Another day, that one. But
yeah, I've literally in the last week, there's if I did an hour session, 30 minutes in, it's out. So on a much smaller scale, but that was it. Like, and I'm like, I can still see the numbers if I want, but you're not seeing them anymore. And now we, in the indoor place, now we're going to set you up on a hole on the virtual golf course. And now you have a pin, not on a driving range anymore. And now you got to go hit some shots, you know? So
yeah, I mean, if you think about the environment we've created in golf, a lot of it's come around convenience, space and things like that. You know, somebody always asked me, if you're going to build your own range tomorrow, what would it look like? I'd have a par three, a par four, and a par five that go in a triangle, and that's it. Where I could just, you know, sit and stop and hit shots if we need to, or we can just play those three holes or whatever we want to do. You know, maybe have three flags in each green and let's do different stuff. But it wouldn't have a driving range on it.
Yeah, we just got to get the TPI headquarters over to Derby, and you're all set.
There we go. I think, I'm not quite sure it's in their plans, but, you know.
We mentioned the consulting business earlier on, which is golf coaching business, and we'll give the handle out before we leave that. You know, and this is a business, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, like the whole kind of premise is to help other coaches develop their business. So, you know, because, you know, we learn to coach, we learn to teach, we learn the technical aspects of the golf swing. But for the most part, and this is with all respect to PGAs across the world, we don't really learn how to run a business maybe as efficiently as we should in terms of the whole global look at it. What does the program do in your own words? So if a golf coach is listening to this, maybe struggling with creating that kind of income levels, creating online presence, whatever, what is it that you provide them so they have a better idea when they come to you?
Yeah, I mean, I'd probably sum it up as a consultancy.
Okay.
So we try not to do things, my golf coach, I try not to do things for people, but we want to create the tools and the accountability. But more than anything, I guess, you know, kind of, if I summarized it one way, you and I are both sat here right now because we were good at hitting a ball into a hole in the field. Okay. And then we realized that we're not good enough, not as good as some other people at hitting a ball in a hole in the field. So what we then do is decide to teach other people to hit a ball into a hole in the field. And that's when you take all the crap out. That's basically what we do. You know, there's days I go home and go, yeah, save the world again today, love. You know, I've helped people to hit a ball into a hole in the field. So we don't know any different. So therefore we fell into the job rather than when I'm going to be a golf coach and, you know, and doing it for money. We almost fell into it by just maybe not being good enough at that, but I'm going to be good enough at this. I'm going to be the best at this. So because of that, we've got no real business sense of what it is. And then somebody says, I'll pay you to help me hit a ball into a hole in the field in fewer shots, which is kind of crazy when you think about it. And so what I did was I got to a stage where I went around the world and I found that I got busy wherever I went. And I started to look at the factors that made that happen. And then you realize that, and I got my diary to a stage where I was probably booked up 3 or 4 months ahead of time. So I knew it worked all over the world. And where I was right now, I knew that people would wait 3 or 4 months to have a lesson if they wanted to. And then I got a call one day from a coach who went, can you help me with my business? I don't know. Let's have a look at it. And I said, well, why don't you apply what I do and see if it works where you are in the world? You know, and it did. And then we wrote, you know, and then I went and on socials and went, anybody want to do a workshop where we come in and try and help you grow your business? 15 people show up and I'm thinking, well, or you say yes. I'm thinking, right, well, I better put a date and a venue on. And so that's kind of how I work. I just throw it out there and then work it out as we go rather than let's plan all this out and then, you know, go from there. So that's kind of what it was. So to answer your question, what do? Yeah, we help coaches all over the world, I guess, have an understanding of how their business is important and that it is a business, as you said earlier. It's not just ball in a field. Actually, you can support your family as you do this. You can create time for yourself, all those kind of things. So we help coaches all over the world go through the process of potentially changing the systems of how they deliver, what they're offering maybe is, what marketing looks like because they've never encountered it before, that sales isn't a scary word and you don't need to associate it with somebody trying to sell you windows or a car. All of these kind of things that then encompass they're actually very good at helping people get better at the game and enjoy it more, and that they can benefit from it as well, and not just the client. And probably the biggest thing, Steve, it's quite a lonely existence. I guess it's one of the big key factors for us is that people feel I'm trying to grow my business here or get better at coaching, but I don't know what to do, you know, because all the information is around how to bow your wrist, how to shallow your swing. And there's loads of tech out there, loads of, you know, coaches really helping people how to help other golfers, but nobody really helping them how to grow their social following. Or one of the biggest things I deal with day in, day out is, what should I charge? You know, coaches don't know what to do, you know. Why do I charge 6 for 5? Well, that's because your pro did it before and the pro before him did it. So, you know, there's a lot of those things that, you know, the stuff, same stuff comes up every day. You know, how do I get to work with tour players? What do a junior program look like? Should I have a website? You know, what's social media like? So it's all of these things. So I guess that's what we do, and how we do it is every coach is different, but we walk on the journey with them, trying to find out whether they want to grow their income, whether they want to get a better work-life balance, or whether they on a career path and they want to know how to get there quicker.
Yeah, I think there's obviously a huge amount in there. And I think that's why it you have this decision as a human in terms of career progression and in life progression, where you can endure and self-learn and self-explore, but knowing that perhaps that will take you more time. Or you have the other option, which is to seek out someone who has endured and explored. And for a monetary size or amount or time amount, you can learn from their experience. And I think there's always the option.
And I think part of that becomes, as you get older again, I guess it comes back to my mentoring question. What you realize is that, I guess what I do is I help people fast track the system. They're maybe going to work it out themselves eventually. Yes. I think you've got the people that work it out themselves eventually. And then you've got the other people that aren't very good at reflecting. So therefore, they're not good at seeing what they're doing. So you've got some people that you go, you're going the wrong direction, you need to turn around. And you've got some people that are going, you're going the right direction, but I can help you get there quicker.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of how I would see it and how we help coaches out. And then the other thing that we do is we, and again, you're back to what we talked about at the start here. So I'll share this one with you if we've got time. So basically, I put workshops on for the first 2 years. Coaches would come in, spend the day. We give them loads of tools and things to go away with. I'd see them 12 months later. How are you getting on? Steve, that was the best day ever. That was awesome. Oh, great. Yeah. What have you done? I've not implemented. I've not had time. I've not, you know. And then you start to realize, like coaching, okay, you need somebody to walk the journey with you. So it went from workshops to consultancy to, you know, let's get on regular calls. And then once you get onto regular calls with people, you can start to move them somewhere. And then the last piece of the puzzle was, Steve, I get now, and I'm trying to implement these things, but I don't have the resources to do it either. Because, and so then we started to put together social media posts for people, newsletters for coaches, weekly blogs they could send out to clients, you know, even forms that players could fill in when they come in so they know where they're at before they do it. And so, you know, drills that they can practice. So we just now it's gone from, yeah, we do consultancy, but also have the resources that coaches can go, I'm busy. Can we automate that? Yeah, that's automated for you. And I can give this out to these people and add value to the program. So I'm a real crusade trying to get rid of 6 for 5 because I don't think it helps golfers. And can we get them on a program where it's about, i.e. the guy hitting it further, or the guy that wants to break 90, or the lady that wants to get to single figures, but that becomes the goal, not discount with $20 off if you do this, because I just don't think that helps people get better.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely fair enough. You know, and again, there's a lot of information in there. So at some stage in what you've discussed for the last 10 or 12 minutes, you probably covered this. But, you know, what's one of the biggest mistakes or kind of errors you see kind of coaches, and not naming anybody for sure, but that you see coaches making in what you do in your skill set?
Two things. One is they don't charge what they should be charging.
Okay.
Or what they're worth. And then the second thing is probably when they do market, we try to market around the tools that we've bought and what's important in our world and not what's in the client world. So probably the biggest thing is not understanding where our clients are right now, i.e. me and the guy that wanted to hit it further. Mm. So I would say to any coach that's watching this, think about what your client wants. Think about the journey they're going to go on to find you. Think about the biggest thing would be think about their pain point. What is the pain that they are going through and that you can solve for them? And to begin with, sometimes they don't even know what the pain point is. You've got to make them aware that there is a problem. So I'd run that all the way down from finding out what people's pain points are, which let's say it's a beginner. The pain point is not they want to learn to play golf. The pain point might be is that they don't want to make a fool of themselves. They don't have many friends that they can go play with. They don't want to be laughed at. You know, all these things become the pain. So if you can give them solutions to those problems, then you're marketing to those people. What I don't agree with is TrackMan lessons, gapping sessions, you know, Skillist or whatever it is. Not, I don't agree with it, but that's not the product. That's not the benefit. That's just the feature. You know, do you want a TrackMan lesson? What's a TrackMan? You want a gapping session? I don't know. What's a gapping session? So that's the biggest thing I deal with, is getting coaches out of their world, of their terminology, and going, put yourself in the client's shoes. What do they want right now? And, you know, if the pain point's bad enough, then we can charge for whatever that pain point is to solve the problem.
Yeah, that all sounds fantastic. And luckily enough, like, this is obviously how we first met, was kind of like through that kind of area, through that expertise. You know, from my perspective, and you mentioned one phrase in there, which I think is huge, and we'll kind of wrap up and then discuss your contact details for any coaches who should reach out to you and have a consult with you. I think awareness is huge. And I think, you know, if you honestly are sitting down listening to us as a coach and you want to improve your business, you want to get more clients, if that's the case, I think being honest and having an awareness and an appreciation where you at, where your strengths lie, where your weaknesses lie. And then if you can get to those things and have an honest reflection of yourself, then I think you can make some great strides. But I think that step is very, very important. If you're a little bit deluded in where you're at, then it's tricky for people like you to really, really help you.
Yeah. And I think tied into that, again, probably another thing that I see a lot of would be coaches almost believe that the more knowledgeable they get, they'll fill their diary. Yes. I think there's a bit of a, again, you're back into your myths, if you like. The more you know, the more people will come. There's definitely a case, if you help people get better, then word of mouth is always going to be the strongest marketing. Mm-hmm. But if you can be really good at what you do, helping people get better, and you understand marketing as well, you can really kind of 10x in this business. You know, and I look at people like, I did a webinar last week, and I used Pete Cowan. Pete Cowan is so cool with his USPs, whether they're intentional or accidental. But if I said to you, Pete Cowan, or I said George Gankus, you'd go, right, flip-flops, hoodie. You're not talking about his level of technical knowledge. You'd talk about how they come. What's Pete dressed in black? You know, what was that USP ad on tour? Was where, well, basically he didn't charge players. He just took 10% of their winnings if you finished inside the top 10. And then the second one was, if you leave him, you're leaving him. That's it. You can't come back. And so he just made it kind of amazing USPs, but not only great coaches, great business people as well with it. You know, and I'd put in that bracket your Martin Chooks, your Phil Kenyons, you know, your James Ridyards, whoever, people that have just gone, I'm great at what I do, but I'm flipping slick at business as well. And you put those together and you've got something really sharp.
Yeah, even James has got an old social media trend lately.
Yeah, he knows his game. And I think because they've got good reflective skills,
yeah,
and they're show up every day type people, yes, then they're going to go there with it.
Yeah. Listen, mate, thank you so, so much. Like, there's so much in here for everybody. And, you know, we could talk for like 4 or 5 hours. And I think within those 4 or 5 hours, if we put that up, people would learn so much. We'd probably get into a little bit of trouble also, but I think people would learn a ton. So unfortunately, with the time limits on these podcasts, I don't think it truly reflects how intelligent you are, the skills you possess that you're trying to help others learn. And I think the only way really for any coaches listening to this, that they're going to get that true representation of you, is to reach out to you, get in contact with you, schedule a consult. I can guarantee you, whatever coach you are listening to this, do it, right? And even if you don't get a mass amount out of it, you will get something, I promise you. Steve is very, very good at what he does. This is what he does professionally, and he will help you. And if you're a player, obviously, great coach, well-renowned, if you're in the Derby area.
happy to offer 30-minute free consult for anybody listening to the podcast.
How do they reach out to you? Instagram should be at Golf Coaching Business.
Yeah, so you can grab me on Steve Astle Golf, or you can grab me on at Golf Coaching Business. We try and put tips on there every day as well to help you grow your business. So jump on there, have a look, drop me a DM, let me know you've seen the pod. And then from there, you can get a link on our golfcoachingbusiness.com website, or there'll be one on Insta as well. Just book a 30-minute call in, and we can, you know, and fill a few details out, and then try and help your business grow for sure.
Awesome. Awesome. Stevie, thank you so much, mate. Pleasure as always.
Well, hey, thanks for having me on, and keep doing what you're doing, Steve, as well. It's great that you're being able to showcase other coaches to the world. So this is cool. And, you know, anybody who's listening to this that doesn't follow Steve already, make sure you do.
Yeah, I've got a lot of love for other coaches, man. Even if they block. All right, mate. Thank love you so much. Take care.
All right, bud.
We'll talk to you soon.
Take care, man.
Bye.
All right, so that wraps up another episode. Massive thank you to Steve for coming on the show, sharing his experience, expertise, and knowledge. If you want to follow Steve, you can catch him on his own personal account on Instagram at Steve Assel Golf, or the coaching business account is at Golf Coaching Business. Alternatively, you can email him, steve@golfcoachingbusiness.com. And if you are a golf coach looking to progress your business, whether that be, you know, advertising, social media, whatever the case may be, I'd highly recommend reaching out to Steve. Have a call, have a consult. I don't think you would regret it. Big thank you to you, the listeners out there, as without you listening and kind of downloading these podcasts, there, well, obviously wouldn't be a show. I really do appreciate the support and the feedback. And just a reminder, if you get the opportunity, please do rate the show on either Apple Podcasts or Spotify. It really, really does help promote the show and get more guests. As always, if you want to work with myself in person or indeed online on the Skillist platform, or if you have any questions on golf or the podcast, you can contact me on Instagram at SteveMoreGolf or through the website SteveMoreGolf.com. Finally, for your own game, don't forget, work hard, work diligently, but most importantly, work smart, and we'll talk to you again in the future.